Hi, my name is Eli Milki. I'm Chief Development Officer for the Middle East, Northeast Africa, Greece and Cyprus at Radisson Hotel Group. And this is my first SMAC episode.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the SMAC Hospitality Podcast. This episode features Eli Milki in preparation for the FHS World event in Dubai at the end of October. And Eli is the Chief Development Officer for the Middle East, Northeast Africa, Cyprus and Greece at the Radisson Hotel Group. Eli and I talked about how development and the relationship with owners in the real estate business and hospitality has changed over time, the differences between Europe and the Middle East in terms of development, and when a brand actually becomes a brand. Enjoy the show. Hello, hello. Welcome to the SMAC Hospitality Podcast. Before I start, I hear congratulations are in order. Chief Development Officer sounds very good. So congratulations, first and foremost, on that recently. Before we start, and obviously give you a chance to introduce yourself, we do a little bit of homework on the SMAC podcast, try and find out a little bit about you. And when you Google your name, a lot comes up, obviously, about the development efforts that you guys are doing at the moment at Radisson, and you know, especially in the Middle East, which is a focus point for you. Straight up question, the past 12 months, how have they been? I imagine as busy as ever.
They've been intense, to say the least. Thank you for having me. The title change or promotion, whichever way you put it, sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
But on the ground in reality and behind the curtains, it's quite intense.
Yeah.
The expectations are higher. The targets are bigger. The workload is growing even more. It's an exciting time. So the past 12 months, we've been able to sign hotels in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia, yeah, in the UAE, in Jordan. We're looking at many opportunities in Greece, which is part of my region as well.
Yeah.
In Oman, more in Saudi Arabia, more in the UAE.
Yeah.
We're growing the team. We're attending conferences. Mm. We are becoming more and more competitive in the market, more and yeah, more relevant to our audience, yeah, which is the owner investor base. In the hospitality real estate investment industry. And so what that brings us to is that it's going to be more exciting in the next few months. There'll yeah, be more announcements in the next few months and hopefully more success to be talked about.
Would you say, I'll jump right in with you, Eli, would you say that development, real estate and the hospitality business is the Wild West at the moment? Because there's news almost every day from you or one of your peers in the industry. There's a lot going on. You know, there's new markets. There's markets that have been developed for a while, which are bringing continuously new opportunities. It's like it's all happening at the same time at the moment. Would you agree?
I agree. It's always been. Yeah. I've been in hospitality development since 2010 with the company when yeah, I joined. Before that, I was in the consulting industry HVS. With HVS.
Yeah.
We were watching what was happening when I joined Radisson. We became part of the action. I think it's always been wild.
Yeah.
It's always been crazy. It's always been difficult. It's always been competitive, but even more so today.
Yeah.
Because of the different dynamics. So for instance, let's say Dubai was more in the development phase in the maybe 15 years ago and yeah, 10 years ago. Today, Saudi Arabia is developing faster than anywhere else, for instance. That doesn't mean Dubai is not busy. Dubai yeah, has other opportunities, conversion opportunities, different gaps in the market. Look at Greece. Greece is bouncing back. And yeah, with Greece bouncing back, there's a lot of opportunities and gaps to fill as well. A lot of investors moving in. So even though each market within my wider region goes through different phases, we always find a way to fill the gap within those phases, whether yeah, it's conversion opportunities in a mature market or development opportunities in a developing market.
What's easier?
I don't know anymore. I don't know.
It's, I have a feeling you might
I told somebody recently that there's more happening, we're doing more, but it's becoming more difficult. Mm. So whatever was supposed to be straightforward is not anymore.
Yeah.
Deals have become, you expect them, whether it's an internal hurdle or an external hurdle, you expect to sign a deal and you think, okay, it's a done deal.
Mm.
And then something pops up. And then you're always on the problem solving mode. You're always yeah, on the creativity mode. You're always, and it keeps you on your toes. Yeah. And I'm very, actually, it makes me realize how proud I am that we're able to do deals. I don't want to sound like Trump, the art of the deal, but in a way, you have to find a way to get the deal done.
Yeah.
And you end up becoming more creative. Mm. And so it's not getting easier.
Yeah. In any shape or form.
No, with either one of them. Not at all.
And yet, if we look at you guys and what you're doing with Radisson, 150 hotels in the Middle East by 2030 is something that's been going through the press quite a bit. You know, obviously 2030, a very important year in the Middle East anyways, Saudi Vision 2030, and there's a lot that has been said about this already. Walk me through, because you know, you and your peers as well in the industry, you know, have very ambitious goals in the Middle East, and we'll talk about how that reflects into parts of Africa and parts of Europe that you're working with as well in a second. But this run in the Middle East for 2030, I read an article from you not too long ago where you said what comes after the giga projects in Saudi Arabia. This is something that you talked about. So it seems to me like you guys are very actively, saying, we have an idea of where we want to be by 2030. And that's kind of in the ballpark of 150 hotels, but you're kind of already now looking beyond what happens after, right? Because the gig, and most people even around the world have now heard about the Neoms of the world, the Red Seas of the world and yada, yada. But you guys are already starting to think, okay, that's great. And we need to be part of that. And we will be part of it. What comes after that? So my question to you is, what does come after it? How is this going to shape out?
Look, our philosophy, my personal strategy and belief is that we need to have a long-term vision and a long-term plan and sustainability. By sustainability, I mean sustainable development. Development and operations that last for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They should not be shaped by an event or a vision. They should be shaped for a long-term real estate investment. We started our strategy for Saudi Arabia, for instance, before Vision 2030 became executional.
Okay.
In 2010, 2011, we put together a strategy for Saudi Arabia. We started signing a lot of deals in Saudi Arabia. So when the Vision 2030 became concrete and solid in 2017, 2018, we were already there executing that vision. So we didn't wait for the vision to become executional or a reality to start doing deals or expanding. Now being part of this vision, we're looking beyond. So it's every phase you have to look slightly beyond, right? In this particular case, I believe in there's two points to this question. The giga projects are there to put Saudi Arabia on the map, and they're beautiful and they're phenomenal. But majority of the visitation to Saudi Arabia, the bread and butter of Saudi Arabia, the pillars and the core of Saudi Arabia, are the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, as well as the commercial cities of Riyadh and Jeddah and the Eastern Province. In addition, you've got the rising secondary cities of Saudi Arabia, which has a strong domestic tourism component, which was there long before Vision 2030 and will stay there long after. So the majority of the developments will be onshore, not Neom or Red Sea or any of those, such as Diriyah, such as Ru' al Medina, such as Knowledge Economic City in Medina. And majority of the activity will be onshore. We are part of that business. Now, yes, we're part of the giga development, some of them, but most of our focus is on what's going to stay, what's more sustainable and what's going to stay longer. In addition, what I also mentioned in the article, if I remember, is also not only the giga developments, but also the giga events.
Yes. Yeah.
So we don't want to build hotels just for the World Cup or build hotels just for the Expo. We want to build hotels that last longer than the Expo and longer than the World Cup.
Yeah.
And we should learn from the mistakes of other hosts of the World Cup. There will be a dip after every giga event, but that dip should not last long. And so we have to have, and I know that Vision 2030 is going to go beyond Vision 2030. They're going to announce it, I'm sure, where there's going to be sustainable development beyond just these giga events as well.
Would you say that long term, when you speak about long term vision, Ellie, would you say that long term in your line of business, the real estate world, the development world, has in fact become longer as a definition than perhaps it was in the past? Because when you talk about long term now, I mean, if we look at what you just said, you know, you started thinking about KSA in 2010. I'm going to go on Olympia not a whole lot of people had KSA on the map as a tourism destination in 2010, right? So would you say that the definition of long-term, and we can fill a whole podcast on what that is, but it has it become longer? So have the terms become longer?
In the business world, they're still short.
Yeah.
Shorter because of targets.
Yeah.
So it's mostly about 3-year targets and 5-year targets. And we have that internally. We've got our 5-year plan. We've got and many businesses look at, a few years ago, we were looking at 2025. Then we started talking about 2030. I'm thinking beyond the business world.
Okay.
I'm thinking after in 2028, we're going to be talking about 2035. We're going to be talking about 2040.
Yeah.
The UAE is talking about 2040 being one of the best places in the world to live in and to be more green and more healthy and all of that. I think what we need to do, me as a professional and us in the industry, we have short-term targets. We want to hit our targets.
Yeah.
The company wants to hit its targets.
Yeah.
And we will do that. But we should not do it at the expense of the long-term vision.
Mm.
And that's a very important point.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other parts of your region for a little bit. You mentioned Greece, southern Europe or, southeastern Europe, a destination that loved by Europeans for a long time, had some difficulties in the past. We'll not get into that. There's many podcasts out there on that already. Now very much on the uprise, especially this summer from the numbers that I've seen and heard, has been very strong. How do you feel about markets like that that have been through, let's say, troubling times, to not make it more dramatic than it has to be, now on the uptick? What are you seeing there? What are some of the things? And maybe compare that for me to the UAE or to KSA, because I would imagine you're seeing very different owner relations and conversations you're having there than as opposed to the conversations you're having here.
I would say, first of all, for Greece, when I took over Greece after having taken care of Cyprus for a while, it was in 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
The timing was good. Mm. I could call myself lucky. But what we did at the time was that things hadn't started picking up really in 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
There were signs, there were positive signs at the time. What we did at the time was to launch a strategy for Greece.
Mm.
So what happened then was we were ready for the boom. And all of a sudden, we signed our first hotel, our second hotel, third hotel. We went from one hotel in 2019 to almost 15 hotels today.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected to see what we did in Greece because the expectations at the time were low. But because we were there with our strategy on the ground, meeting with different owners and investors, we were able to succeed and now transform our image in the country. Now, the difference in Greece is you have some local investors. You have some white label operators.
Mm-hmm.
You've got foreign investors from the UK, from regional countries, from different countries around the world. You've got the government incentive schemes, the government subsidies, the grants. All of these were able to stimulate investment in Greece. And so what happened was, when we had entered, Radisson was not very well known in Greece, or at least it didn't have a great image at the time. Today it's totally different because of what we've done there. The mindset of the local investor in Greece had to change, because what was interesting there is that you've got around 10,000 hotels in Greece. Okay, yes, many of them are small family-run businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
But less than 1% of those hotels were internationally branded.
Mm-hmm.
That's less than 100.
Mm.
And I'm talking international brands, not the local brands.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's the lowest brand penetration in Europe.
Mm.
That's the lowest brand penetration around the Mediterranean. And so if you're going to increase that from 1% to 2%, you're adding another 100 hotels.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the scale of the opportunity there. But so what's happening there is that the local mindset is changing.
Mm.
The new generations are seeing the added value of a brand. Some owners are historically wouldn't come to an international brand because they didn't see the need to. Now they see the added value of an international brand, more feeder markets, more distribution channels, spreading the risk, lower OTA fees, higher average rates, sustainability initiatives, a big loyalty program, et cetera, et cetera. So that is changing from that perspective. You also have white label operators in Greece that operate hotels that are now wanting to partner with an international group. And we have a couple of these partnerships in Greece already as well. We've got foreign investors who want to, who have invested in Greece and who only want an international brand.
Yeah.
That's where we come in and add value as well. You've got banks who are funding developments that want a brand on board.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden in Greece, from a big challenge, we started seeing the...
A lot of opportunities.
Glimpses of opportunity, yeah. Where we could add value and how we could get it done. So Greece is a bit of a different game. Yes, it's in a mature continent. It's in Europe, but it's developing in many ways.
Yeah.
And I don't see many similarities with the Middle East because of its own unique history.
Development
phase and all of that.
Yeah.
In the UAE, in Saudi Arabia, in the rest of the GCC, in the Levant, because we've signed a resort in the Lebanese mountains as well, in Farah. So you've got GCC investors mostly in the Middle East, in the GCC. We've signed with a consortium of banks, two hotels in Jordan, in Amman.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful deal with a consortium of seven banks in Jordan. We've got our existing hotel there by individual investors. We have signed with government sovereign wealth funds in Saudi Arabia and in the UAE. We've signed with different government entities. We've got many local individual developers and many real estate developers.
Would you say that your role has become more complicated, Ily? Because I remember a time, and I'm going to spoil my age a little bit here, but I remember a time when I first came into the industry, 2009, 2010, it was development, in my opinion, at least from what I remember, was at a very different point. Now you're speaking to so many different types of partners, potential business partners. Surely that's made it more complex because the way you speak to a consortium of banks, I imagine, is very different. And the questions you're getting are very different to, you know, an individual private investor from KSA.
Yes, yes, of course. I think it's become more complex. Owners are becoming more sophisticated.
Yeah.
The conversations are more interesting, more challenging, more demanding. The environment is even more competitive than it was. I think I have to say the competitive environment in the GCC is much stronger than it is in the Levant region or in Northeast Africa.
Yeah.
Or in the Eastern Mediterranean, in Greece and Cyprus. And so that has put pressure on fees. That has put pressure on us as international hotel groups.
Yeah.
And yes, we have to remain competitive. We have to adapt to the changing environment, to the changing market.
So let's talk about the competition because there's obviously a few others out there as well. And I was curious to hear how you guys at Radisson see the competition. And I'm not going to pick your brains about trade secrets. I probably wouldn't get them out of you anyways, but I'm going to ask this. If you look at kind of the competitive set out there, right? We've got the big, big groups at the top, the Marriotts, the Hiltons, the Accors of the world. Would you say perhaps that more so today than maybe 10 years ago, not being in that top flight of one of the biggest, perhaps is actually an advantage for you guys because you have a little bit more, I don't know, personal flair, personal touch. And I'm not trying to throw shade at the guys at Hilton, Accor, and Marriott, but surely sometimes you walk into meetings with a smile knowing that, you know, you've got a slightly more personalized offer, you've got a slightly more, and this famous word, boutique offer, perhaps, than another big brand. Would you agree? Or is it actually the other way around where you say, sometimes it'd be nice to have a brand with 600 hotels around the block?
Yeah, look, first of all, I've walked into meetings where I saw one of my peers coming out and we look at each other and we
high
smile.
Hey,
how's it going? Yeah. Good luck, but not so, but not so
not
much.
Too much.
I think I have a lot of respect for the major players in the industry and I think, we all have a role to play and I think we all have room to be part of the growth. I think today we are more competitive with the big guys.
Yeah.
And we are more on par and we are more in that club in the top five than we were 15 years ago, for sure.
For sure. Yeah, I agree.
We've taken over and rebranded several hotels that had over another brand.
Yeah.
From different groups because of an end of a termination comes to an end. And we have lost one or two hotels in recent years to another group because of the expiry of the contract as well. So it's a fair game. Mm. We are not as big as the as Marriott, Hilton, Accor, and Hyatt for sure. That makes us more boutique. That's true. I always say the disadvantage that we have is that we only have 5-6 brands that we focus on.
We'll talk about that in a second as well. Yeah, yeah.
An important point, because versus the 25, 35, and 55 brands that others have. However, so for instance, the disadvantage is if you don't like my 4 or 5 brands or 5-6 brands, I don't have 5 more to offer.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other guys, yeah, if you don't like my 5, I have 15 more. And so that's an advantage that they have. I don't have that. But the advantage is, from my side, the way I look at it, is that we focus on those 5-6 brands. And there's a lot of attention that goes into 5-6 brands. We don't cannibalize each other's brands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we need more brands? I think we have room to add more brands into our portfolio. We've recently launched Art Hotel as our lifestyle upper upscale brand in the that sits between Radisson Blu and Radisson Collection. I think there's a good space for it, that we will be hopefully announcing more hotels soon with that brand. We have launched a budget brand in recent years, Prize by Radisson, which is in the budget economy lifestyle tier. So we want to be more active, but I think an advantage that we have is we're more focused on the few brands that we have. Mm. We are more boutique. We're more personal. We're more responsive. We're more owner oriented. We're more real estate friendly when it comes to our brands and hotel developments. We work more with the investor than I believe many of the competitors do. We focus more on the profitability of the hotel rather than the image of the hotel. There's a lot of advantages that I'm very proud of, and I think we've come a long way where we've built that reputation in the market. 70% of our owners have more than one hotel with us. We're growing our portfolio with different investors. And I think it's only going to get better in the next few years. Mm.
I have to pick your brain, because I don't think many people that work in the industry perhaps know how this development game works. But when you just said, I couldn't help but laugh when you just said, you know, sometimes I walk into a meeting and one of my peers walks out. How do you approach, you very personally, how do you approach these kind of meetings, or somebody in your team? You know, can you walk us through a little bit of, because I think it's quite interesting, and again, without sharing any trade secrets, obviously, but what are some of the steps that you guys take to prepare for a meeting like this, knowing, well, you know, our friends from across the street have been in that meeting as well, and they're probably speaking to three or four people. What are some of the things that you try and bring to the table? Where do you, you know, and like you, to your point, and we'll talk about your brands in a second. You know, you only have 5, 6, 7, 8 brands that you can work with, and some of those brands might not even apply. So you might each actually only be going into the meeting with one.
Yeah, even.
Exactly. Walk me through how that you know, process of preparing goes.
First of all, when you enter into a meeting, when owners reach that phase where they start meeting operators, they usually have an idea about the positioning of their hotel or service apartments or resort. So we don't usually walk in saying, okay, here's my list of brands. Yeah? Yeah. It's more about, okay, how can this one brand add value to your investment versus the other brands that you're discussing?
Okay.
Right? Yeah. That's the first point. Second thing is, first thing I keep in mind, and I've learned that over the years, and is never to put anybody else down, never to badmouth anybody else in the market by selling yourself. So it's easy to sell yourself by saying how bad everybody else is.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is something I've always avoided doing, because I wouldn't want them to do the same towards me, even though it has been done in the past.
I'm sure
and
it
I've
has.
Heard about it, and yeah. I don't want to name any names.
No, we won't.
But
you heard it here first.
There you go. But what's important is to keep some sense of dignity, because it's a small industry and we're professional enough to get the deal done with the resources that you have and with the backing that you have and with the product that you have.
Yeah.
And what I usually say in meetings, why us versus, why this brand versus others, is I list the advantages and I tell them what my disadvantages are very honestly. And I tell them that at the end of the meeting, maybe it's a strategy, but I do it genuinely. Maybe it's a lot of secrets I'm revealing at this podcast.
We can edit it.
The idea is I tell them if they're negotiating with
X, Y, and Z, yeah,
whichever decision they make will be the right one. And I leave it at that.
Okay.
Sometimes I get the deal, sometimes I don't.
Sometimes you don't. Yeah. Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. So, very interesting. So let's swap the conversation to the whole brand conversation, because it's an interesting point you've made earlier where you've said you have substantially less brands, obviously, than some of the big kahunas out there. And you know, we could fill our own podcast of whether it's good to have 40 plus brands or not. And there's probably pros and cons we can find there. If I look at your brands and obviously some of the, let's call them some of your legacy brands, you know, the Radisson Blue and the collection and now more recently Arts Hotel were, and I'd love for you to explain it because I've had a look at it and I've seen it before. And I love the idea that you try and partner with local artists, which I think is something that you're very, very passionate about with that brand. So walk me through how you see your portfolio of brands versus some of the others without bad mouthing the others. Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't obviously do that. Cause I think, like you said, everybody has their place in the market because I would imagine sometimes it's an advantage to have less brands. Would you agree?
Yes. It is an advantage.
Why is that?
Because you focus on these brands and you develop more of a trust that you're not going to launch 10 more brands in the next 2 years. And right next door to the hotels, certain hotels and certain locations.
Yeah.
I think it is an advantage. Now from but I have to be fair. Consolidation and expansion is also a natural part of any of the growth of any industry.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the automotive industry, how car manufacturers bought others
each other, merged.
And all of a sudden you've got different brands under one
umbrella. Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a natural
Evolvement of the industry, so to speak.
Evolution of the industry to reach that point. And we were bought by the Chinese, by Xinjiang. And we expect that to continue over the years as it becomes more competitive, to create scale, to create advantage and all. So there's nothing wrong with that. Now, the disadvantage, it comes at a cost. It comes at a cost of upsetting owners, upsetting investors who thought they were getting more attention. All of a sudden, they became part of big umbrella.
Yeah.
It always comes at a cost. But the way I see it is we are currently focusing on what we have. We're capitalizing on the advantage that we have. When the time comes where we have to grow or merge, and it will eventually come because it's a natural phenomenon, we'll try to find ways to mitigate the risk, to reduce the impact, the negative
preserve
impact,
and preserve the brand
to maintain the relationships and all of that. So I'm a bit torn between the two, but it's a natural process. It's a natural process, and I don't have any strong opinions about it. I think it's something that we have to be mindful of.
Yeah. If you had to pick out of the brands that you have today within the Radisson portfolio, if you had to pick a favorite, and I realize it's like picking one of your kids, but if you had to pick a favorite, purely not by your personal preference, because I don't want to put that upon you, but in terms of developing, and what's a brand that you feel is quite easy? I imagine there's a lot of potential for Art Hotel. Would you agree?
Selective. So I wouldn't say a lot. I would say there is very good potential for Art Hotel with select owners and select locations.
Okay. Yep. I see what you mean. Yeah.
I've had somebody ask me about Art Hotel in a market in the Middle East. And I said, no, one, because the location was wrong. Two, because they were not the right owners.
Okay.
You need to find an owner that understands, discussing Art Hotel for a second, that understands the value of art, that understands lifestyle.
Yeah.
That has the budget for it, that sees the long-term impact of the brand and the legacy it's going to create, because Art Hotel is about creating a destination. Mm. It's about, as you mentioned, signing with a local artist or a regional artist and part of the development, part of the story. But beyond that, it's about a well-rounded lifestyle element, which is about art, music, fashion, gastronomy, literature, wellness. It's the community, events. It's a beautiful brand. I wouldn't, if I were to choose one brand, Art Hotel, I think, is a very sexy brand.
Yeah.
I think is for certain locations like Riyadh, as it develops its cultural heritage, downtown Dubai or a financial district in Dubai or Saadiyat Island in Abu Dhabi or
places like Muscat,
places
for example, or
like
Oman.
Cairo.
Yeah.
Muscat, it depends on the location. Yeah. Like Cairo, like Istanbul, Athens, places of history and heritage. International cities like Singapore, yeah. like Bangkok, like Hong Kong, Sydney, Tokyo, Seoul. So beauty of art, we've got two in London that are stunning. We've recently opened in Rome as well, Amsterdam. So the beauty about the brand is it has to be in certain locations, urban locations, creating a legacy destination and the whole story around it. Back to your original question. Sorry, we got diverted. I think if I were to choose from an investment perspective and in terms of scale, I think Radisson Red would be my favorite because it's in the upscale tier, 4-star, lower development cost, quick turnaround, profitable hotel operational model, yeah. Can be present in more locations than one selectively, but it can create scale. It can be in industrial locations. It can be in city centers. It can be in a stunning lifestyle resort. That's our upscale lifestyle brand that I think I would choose if I were to...
If you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one, yeah. if I had to put in my own money, if I had to... we have a stunning portfolio that yeah. I'm happy to talk
very
about.
Very versatile
well.
Brand. Is that probably the right yeah. way of saying it? Yeah.
Very versatile. It's it's about lifestyle, also touching on art, wellness, gastronomy, yeah. Fashion, music. But it's more efficient in operation. It's yeah. It's more... It's more controlled in development cost. It's more real estate friendly to the investor. Yeah. It's more flexible in terms of design as long as you keep the art element and as long as you keep the local element as well because every Radisson Red has to adapt to the local environment that it's yeah. in. So it's a bit of a more efficient version of Art Hotel,
yeah.
I would say.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Tell me this. If we talk about brands and branding in general, also something that's kind of taken off in the industry in the past, you know, 5, 7, maybe 10 years were, you know, in the past, the brand was the brand and that was it. There wasn't too much thinking process that went into it. Now you've got, you know, this whole idea of lifestyle brands, which is a fairly, you know, new, if we still want to call it yeah. new trend, but you know what I mean, right? Where do you see this importance of brands going for you guys in the development? I realize the marketing guys will tell us, oh, it's the most important thing on the planet. Would you agree from a development perspective that this whole idea of branding and the way the brand is positioned, is that also something that when you said, you know, the conversation with owners are getting more sophisticated, is that something that ties into that? Are owners increasingly more interested in the brands or is profitability still, you know, the number one thing and what color the logo on the door has really not that relevant?
I think there's a lot of attachment to brands. Yes. Yeah. I think brands are important. And that's an important thing for you, the point that you've mentioned, Fritz, because I've seen some owners wanting to go on their own, wanting to create their own brands.
Yeah.
I've seen many of us creating our own brands. A brand, in my opinion, my definition, and I'm going to get to the point of buzzwords in the industry because that's a very important point. The word, in my opinion, a brand becomes a brand after years and decades of investment and becoming established, yeah. history, investment, and yeah. becomes known to people. Mm. Whenever somebody says, I'm launching a brand, I don't think it's a brand yet.
Mm.
You're launching a concept, you're launching a name, you're launching a, but then it will become a brand after 10, 20 years.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
So, the Radisson Blue, we started off as SAS Hotels in 1960, became Radisson SAS in the 90s, became Radisson Blue. 20, 30 years ago, it probably wasn't really a brand because it wasn't on anybody's tongue yet. It becomes a brand when you start associating it with an experience, with a lifestyle, with a resort, with a hotel, with your kids talking about it, your wife talking about it. So I'm very careful when I use the term brand. That's why what I think the right thing to do today is acquiring smaller brands or up-and-coming brands is a better way than launching a brand because, in my opinion, it's not a brand yet.
Very interesting.
So yes, many owners are very in touch with brands. They're very opinionated about brands. They have a certain affiliation, a certain understanding concept, a holiday they spend. The kids loved it. They talk about it. So many owners come to us and say, look, I stayed at this hotel. I would like another one. Or I saw this hotel that was announced. I would like the same brand.
Mm.
And on the other hand, you have some new investors coming to the market where I remember the Radisson Red in Athens is a great example with developers in a stunning location in Athens, right in front of the main cathedral. I remember them saying, what brand can you offer? Shall we go for luxury? And I said to them, look, guys, yes, it's a very central location, but your rooms are going to be very tight. Your lobby is very tight. This is going to be a very, very interesting conversion of a listed building.
Mm.
I would say make it lifestyle. But what do I mean by lifestyle? I can offer you my Radisson Red brand.
Mm.
I'm not going to go too low on the positioning. It's a 4-star plus positioning upscale. I don't like to use the star ratings because they vary from country to country. You don't want to go luxury because it's going to cost you more to develop. It's going to be difficult to get the average rate on the tiny room and the small lobby. And you're going to get fewer rooms maybe if you want to get bigger rooms. Here's an opportunity to have an efficient 4-star Radisson Red lifestyle operation.
Yeah.
We showed them the images. We showed them the renders. They loved it. Property is opening in 9 months.
Mm.
It's going to be one of our best. And we have many examples of these conversion stories for Radisson Red, listed buildings, office buildings in Tbilisi, Georgia, Liverpool, Madrid, Athens, and others. That's an example of how we were able to sell the brand idea as an investment to the investor.
When we talk about brands, something that's come up in recent times is obviously this whole concept of branded residences as well. And I would love your opinion on this. Obviously something that Jonathan Worsley, the FHS team has created as part of the FHS event that's going to take place in a couple of weeks. They've created their own branded residences forum as part of the bigger FHS World event, which kind of showcases, you know, the importance this is having. Otherwise, obviously the guys at the bench wouldn't be doing that. And also we've seen and heard, especially here in the region and in the Middle East and also in Europe, it's popped up more and more. Branded residences popping out of the earth left, right, and center.
Mm.
Walk me through your perception on this whole branded residences gig. Is there really something there from a development perspective? And what do you make of brands coming into the industry? And I realize there's probably two ways of looking at this. Brands coming into the industry that per se might not be hospitality brands. The Armanis of the world, the Karl Lagerfelds of the world, and so on and so forth, that we know from other industries first and foremost. And again, there's probably a place for everyone in the industry, but I'd love to hear from a true development guru of 15 years, how do you see that and the whole branded residence game?
It's
and be brutally honest.
Yeah. Look, it's not our main line of business, but we have been entertaining branded residential developments with our investors for a few years now. In Dubai, in Cyprus, and in Saudi Arabia, in Greece, in Georgia, through my colleagues and other regions. I'm not totally against the idea. I think there is room for branded residences. I think in the luxury tier, I see the added value for luxury brands that have been involved in branded residences for several years, Four Seasons, Mandarin Oriental, and others. Yeah. I believe that there is a market for that. The only... And I'm happy to see that Dubai is leading the pack now globally in brand residential development.
Yeah.
But I'm always a bit cautious.
Mm.
I'm a bit afraid of the hype.
Mm.
What we haven't tested yet, we have seen luxury brand residential real estate. What we haven't tested yet is the long-term impact on these investors buying units into these developments. We've seen the Armanis of the world and Missoni and all that. They come at a higher premium because of the luxury element. But are these owners really getting their money's worth after they move in? I hope so. The thing is, one day somebody might realize, hold on, it wasn't really worth it, or maybe it was worth it. Mm. Now, like I said, there's a niche in the market that is very successful in the luxury tier. But with the volume that's coming into the market, there's going to be a large proportion that will not be happy, in my view.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't upset anybody. But all I want from this is that if we're doing this, let's be more selective. Mm. Let's do it. Let's see which brands would be more suited for these developments. Let's make sure that the end user or the buyer or the investor
is not
disappointed later on in the journey.
Mm. Two or three final questions, because just like that, 45 minutes have gone, Eli. But I wanted to get your general. If you compare development, and I realize Europe is not fully or entirely part of your responsibility, but you speak to your colleagues, and obviously you have a global view on things, anyways, because you need to in relation to what you're doing here. If you compare development in Europe with development in the Middle East, give me some of the main things where you see there's a difference there, or there's perhaps a bigger focus there. What are some things that you're seeing that are monumentally different? Are there some things, or is it more or less the same for the reason that you just explained, that, you know, owners have become more sophisticated. They're better informed. They know what they want. They're coming with more concrete questions perhaps than they have in the past.
Yeah. Now if I want to generalize Europe, and I've got my colleagues based in London, Brussels, Berlin, who cover most of Europe. And from what I hear from them, from what I see, it's a more difficult market there, in the sense that you don't have the volumes that we have in the Middle East and Middle East, Asia, parts of Africa. Owners are more already more sophisticated. The markets are already more mature. There are more conversion opportunities in Europe than there are in the Middle East. There are more institutional investors in Europe than there are in the Middle East. And there are more white label operators in Europe that operate hotels under different brands than we have in the Middle East, although that's growing in the Middle East. That's why in Europe we could consider in some mature markets leases instead of management contracts, which is a majority in the Middle East, or franchises that we're doing more of. I would put Greece in between majority of Europe because Greece is still somewhat developing, but it has its own challenges, its own characteristics, its own opportunities. So that would be a summary of where I would put it. More leases in Europe, whereas in the Middle East, it's more management contracts with a growing percentage of franchises. We do more franchises in Europe because they're more established markets as well.
Yeah.
Those are the main differences that I see.
And if we swing that around, FHS World is obviously around the corner. I know that you have confirmed your attendance and will be there. And what are final question in that sense, Elif? What are some of the things that you've seen at these events when you come together? And there's obviously, you're not the only developer at the event. That much is also true. You speak, I'm sure, to your peers at other events as well. What are some of the things that you've seen at these FHS events? Some of the conversations were you know, FHS Saudi Arabia was only a couple of months ago, that are valuable for you in terms of what you're doing. A bit of a knowledge exchange, I assume, is never a bad thing.
No, FHS World has become an institution.
Yeah.
It's become, I remember 20 years ago, before I went off to do my MBA, I was in Dubai for working in a local hotel, just getting that experience to do my MBA.
When was the first time you were in Dubai?
2003.
Okay. Wow.
So in 2005, I remember attending I lived in Dubai 2003, 2005 before I came back in 2010. I remember seeing some of my friends who had gone to the same MBA program and who were attending this conference, and I met them on the sidelines of the conference. And so I didn't know at the time that it was the first year, and that was 2005. 20 years later,
here we are. Yeah.
I've attended the conference 15 times already.
Yeah.
And as part of Radisson, I think I had attended it once as part of HVS as well.
Yeah.
And it's become an institution. It's become
one of the events.
A legacy. Yeah. It's become you, even though you might not get new business while you're there, you're just expected to be there. You want to be there, and you reconnect with industry peers, the competition, friends in the industry.
Yeah.
You reconnect with existing owners. You might meet new owners, even though they might be invited by somebody else. You might still meet them. You invite some of your owners.
Yeah.
You attend some panels. I'm on a panel myself.
Yeah.
With FHS World, the beauty is it's becoming more global. So my region, because it's a bit of strange mix.
Fragmented, yeah.
All of a sudden, I've got my investors from Pakistan coming, yeah. my investors from Greece coming, my investors from Cyprus coming. Egypt is growing. So it's putting a global touch to the conference. And I think it's important because Dubai itself is maturing as a city. It's not only a regional hub, it's become a global hub.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good reflection of the city and the vision the city is the country is chasing.
Yeah. I appreciate your time, Eli. Thank you so much. We have a final game that we like to play on the podcast.
Yes, tell me.
It's a game that we call, I need to pull out my cheat sheet because I can't remember it off the top of my head. It's a game that we call Book, Buy and Bulldoze. The three B's. Okay. So seeing as you're a veteran of Dubai, which is why I just asked how long have you been here, I'm going to give you, in your role as development a boss for Radisson here in the Middle East amongst other parts of the world, I'm going to give you three hotels in Dubai and you can book one with your family. You can buy one to put it into the Radisson group and you have to bulldoze the third one. Are you ready, sir?
Nice. Okay.
Okay. So here are the three properties we have for you. You can choose between the Burj Al Arab, Atlantis the Palm, the old one, and Armani Hotel Dubai inside Burj Khalifa. Which one do you book? Which one do you buy to add to the Radisson collection? And which one are you bulldozing?
I will not get in trouble if I do that.
I promise you won't. I have no personal
preference. I don't want to bulldoze the wrong hotel.
and then we get shouted at. No. It's a completely unbiased.
Okay. So it's Burj Al Arab, Atlantis, the Palm.
Yes.
And Armani.
Correct. Book one, buy one, bulldoze one.
All right. So book Atlantis, the Palm, the family. At least the kids will be happy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now it gets juicy.
Bulldoze and... Yeah, I'm going to have to bulldoze Burj Al Arab in this case.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both landmarks.
They are.
And I'd love the Armani to become a Radisson collection.
Yes.
Inside the landmark, in the heart of Dubai.
It will work quite nicely from a development perspective, huh?
That's my answer.
Very good. Eli, looking forward to meeting you at FHS. See you there.
Likewise.
Thank you for your time. And
thank you.
Best of luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.